The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware. Welcome to the Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark. Each week, WVUD hosts different artists to talk about the music they play and the lives they lead. Stay tuned for the Music Room on WVUD.
Hello, everybody. I'm Mando Richard, and welcome to the Music Room on WVUD. Tonight, we have a conversation I had on January 20th of 2014 with Donna Ulysses. Don't know who Donna Ulysses is? Well, stay tuned. You'll find out. As she talks candidly about her career as a singer and a songwriter, you'll hear how gracious she is, and I think you'll really enjoy getting to know her. When she speaks about Kathy, she's speaking about Kathy Anderson from Hadley Music, and thank you, Kathy, for helping to arrange this interview. And when she talks about her husband, she's talking about Rick Stanley. Yes, indeed, she married a cousin of Carter and Ralph Stanley. That's enough stage setup. Relax, settle back, and meet Donna Ulysses in the Music Room on WVUD.
When I think back on it, I didn't consider myself a very serious writer until about 15 years ago, but one of the first things I ever recorded when I came to Nashville and I was still in school was something that I wrote.
You were singing for a while, I think, like in church and in
oh, yeah.
Western swing bands and,
yeah.
and doing demo work. And
I am busy. You know, I think in the early days that might have even been a little bit of a mistake, just not sort of putting my foot down and saying, you know, this is who I'm going to be and this is, you know, kind of keeping my nose to the grindstone. I couldn't fathom myself in those days turning down work, so I kind of did a little bit of everything.
And then that did lead, though, to a brief spell on Atlantic Records.
Yes, it did. It was actually through one of the demos I had been hired to do, and now, I remember doing that demo because it was, you know, here in Nashville, they're everywhere. They're in the closets and down in basements. This particular one was a good drive out in somebody's basement, and the basement smelled really moldy. I remember it well, thinking, let me just get through this song. So, in my opinion, I hadn't put my heart and soul into it, and it landed on the desk of Dale Morris, who at the time was Alabama's manager, and he heard something in it. I mean, he gave me the deal. He told me, he called me up to his office, and he said, if you shake hands with me today, and it was at 1 o'clock, he said, I will have you a major record deal this afternoon. And I thought,
wow,
yeah, yada, yada. I've heard those songs and stories before. So, but I left, and by 3 o'clock, I was on Atlantic Records.
You ended up having a lot of fun then. I mean, it's a totally different world that you're in now, but it must have been fun. Singing with the likes of Crystal Gayle and Susie Boggess and Steve Warner and showing up on Hee Haw. And
I guess when I look back on it, I didn't know, it just as we entered the bluegrass market in the same, I had the same sort of mindset. I didn't know who to be afraid of or in awe of. Of course, I was in awe of my heroes in the business, but I didn't know to be afraid of them or anything. So it was just a lot of fun. I just sort of humbled myself in front of them and everybody. We all just had a big time. I think it made it a little harder because it was sort of easy for me. It was easy for me to get the deal. I mean, nobody gets a deal in 2 hours, you know, and all of that, that when it was jerked away from me, it made it that much harder to sort of regain my footing. It was a real struggle afterwards.
Let's let the folks listen to something from back in your 1991 Country Diva days.
Wonderful.
I really like Out of Sight, Out of Mind.
I love that one. That was produced just because I can't do anything uncomplicated. I had two producers on this Atlantic album. Josh Leo, who comes out of the L.A. market, produced half, and then my dear friend Ray Baker produced the other half, and Out of Sight, Out of Mind is on Ray Baker's half.
Last night, I loved you for the last time.
Out of
after the country deal ended for me, we tried really hard to get me signed somewhere else. I think Dale Morris thought he could just whisk me in anywhere, but that was the time when country music was changing. It was changing hands and attitude and everything, and my brand of country was a little too country for him, and so he couldn't land me a deal, and I thought I had died. You know, it was, I had to mourn it like a death. It was during that time that another head of a record label, his name is Tim Dubois, he was a head of Arista Records at that time, and he told my manager at that time that I think you should have her explore songwriting because I believe she'll find another voice within her songwriting. And I really thought he was saying I wasn't good enough to be an artist anymore. So I really did bury it. I mourned the loss of my, you know, artist life, and I let it go, and I begrudgingly embraced songwriting. I thought, well, that'll be choice number two. And then I started writing songs and got so attached to what I was writing that it was hard for me. Like Kathy, the girl that runs the publishing office, she would come to me and say, you know, Trisha Yearwood's looking, and this might be a really great song for her. And I would go home and just cry myself to sleep going, wait a minute, that was supposed to be my song. I had it tough either way. But I got over it. You know, I got over it as time went on and I was writing commercial country music. I didn't have a lot of success in that vein because still, my brand of music was a little too country for what was happening in the country world. So it didn't really help me in the songwriting world either. And then I just sort of tripped up into writing this Appalachian mountain theme music. And I really wasn't concentrating on writing it. It fell out of my head that way. It was Kathy that recognized that maybe I should try some bluegrass instrumentation behind some of those songs and just see what would happen.
So if you're too traditional country for the country folks, maybe traditional country would work with traditional country music. What an idea.
And it was hard to figure out music business in those days. I'm telling you, Richard, it was tough.
It sounds like you've come to peace with the idea now that...
Well, you know, all it did, it took me writing. I have some dear friends in the business, Lynn and Carrie Chater, and I try to include a co-write of theirs on everything that I do. They were actually the ones that wrote the title cut for my Atlantic record album, Trouble at the Door. They wrote the song Trouble at the Door. And we became friends during that era. And then when I wanted to start writing, they invited me over. And, I mean, Carrie Chater's discography is huge. He wrote songs like I Owe You for Lee Greenwood and You Look So Good in Love for George Strait and some really major songs. He's also the most wonderful teacher. I mean, he lovingly showed me how to write songs. I mean, I wrote them instinctively the way that I wrote songs, you know. But having a master at it show you how to strengthen and carve and hone those things, it was just a really wonderful million-dollar education I had sitting there at the breakfast table of the Chaters.
And fast forward to 2011 when I saw you at work at one of Louisa Branscombe's workshops. I think this was up at the Podunk Festival in Connecticut. And it was just really neat to see you and Louisa and the participants in the workshop collaborating.
I think that, I think I told Louisa, I might have told her during this, I'm going to do a workshop with Louisa at Louisa's songwriting farm. I remember thinking even that day, I don't care where you are in your songwriting, whether you're just starting off and trying to figure it out or you've written, you know, like Carrie Chater, 15 number one records, you always are learning. I learn from people that don't even know what they're doing, and they teach me something. You know, so collaborating is a real important part of songwriting to me.
Well, it's good for those songwriters at the workshop, though, too, to see how you, who were going to perform a song that they were writing there, had some input and some ideas for what would work and what would work for you singing and that kind of thing. And I think that's an important thing, too, for a songwriter to recognize that you need to collaborate with the singer, unless you're lucky enough to be singing your own song.
Yeah, it is. That's true. Yeah, because I remember being an artist on Atlantic Records and having, you know, just acres of songs pitched at me. So some days I would listen to songs 8 hours a day. And here in Nashville, they have these beautiful publishing houses and these little hotshot listening rooms in there where they're very decorated and comfortable. And they're bringing the artist, you know, whatever you want. If you want, water and cookies and cheese. And you're just sitting there for about 3 or 4 hours listening to song after song. And I remember thinking then that it was so hard for me to say what I did or didn't like about a song before I told the plugger to turn the song off. And now that I'm a writer, having the experience of being an artist and knowing what it was that appealed to me or didn't appeal to me really helps me as a writer, so that when I pitch my songs to people like Del McCurry or Claire Lynch, you know, I sort of know what an artist would dig or not dig in a song.
How did Del McCurry get his hands on the Butler Brothers song?
A miracle. My mother's maiden name is Butler, and we had the setting of this Civil War song. Jerry Sally and I sat down to write a Civil War song. We had heard that they were looking for songs for this project called God Didn't Choose Sides on Rural Rhythm. So we wanted to write a Civil War song, and my husband, his family is just steeped in all this really dark history up in the mountains, up in the Clinch Mountains, because, you know, it's so rural up there, and it's right on the line where some of his family were fighting for the North and some were fighting for the South, and there was a family divided. And so parts of this song is a true story, and I was telling Jerry about it, and he totally got it, and we called it the Butler Brothers because he was just wanting a family name. And we had it set on the only battle in the Civil War that they could not declare a winner on, and it was on the battlefield of Williamsburg, Virginia, which is where my father lives now. So I thought that it really added a poignancy to the whole story, is that the premise of the story are there are two brothers, and they're fighting on opposite sides, and they meet up on the battle grounds in Williamsburg, and they both die. And the real loser in all of this, the huge loser in all this, of course, is the mother, who couldn't pick a side because she had a son on each side, and they fought together, and it was just it's a really sad story. So when we finished it, Jerry said, you know, I know we wrote it for that project, but do you mind if I give it to one of the McCurrys? And I said, no. and we got a call, and Del told Jerry, he said, it has to be one of the best Civil War songs ever written.
The Butler Brothers grew up on the Loudoun County line. As winds of war were blowing through the North Virginia pines. Reuben was the baby, Zach was the eldest son. Those boys became men too soon in 1861. One foot on Yankee soil, one foot on rebel ground. Soon Virginia split in two, just like the North and South. Zach fought with George McClellan, Reuben went Longstreet, and left their mama fighting anxious teardrops on. They call my sons away.
In addition to the Butler Brothers, another one of my favorites you've written is another Civil War song that was on your 2011 CD in Easy Climb, Shady Glen. That's such a dark song. I still get shivers when I hear it.
Well, you know, in my head, it looks like a little mini movie, and somebody needs to snap it up and write a script to it. But we were driving. My husband's mother still lives in the Clinch Mountains up near Ralph and Carter Stanley's place. My father-in-law has the old home place that his father had, and it juts right outside of the mountain in Clintwood, Virginia. And his mother had been in Nashville visiting with us, so Rick and I decided we were going to drive her back up and stay a few days there. And I was just sitting in the back seat by myself, and this movie started playing in my head about this woman. I just started putting it down in poetry form, you know, just writing the lyric. And it was just falling out real easy out of my head, and I called it Shady Glen. Then when we got to the mountains, I said, Rick, you need to look at this and see if you can put a melody to it. And I said, I just don't know what to call the girl yet. And he goes, oh, caller Molly Vaughn. My great grandfather had written a song years ago called Molly Vaughn. So I said, okay. So we wrote it, and he goes, wow, where would you have thought of something like this? I said, I don't know. So we'd come back home, and we said, wouldn't it be weird if there was a Shady Glen and a Molly Vaughn and something that happened like this? Well, we look it up, and lo and behold, it was spelled M-O-L-L-I-E, and she helped protect soldiers on a Shady Glen of her daddy's farm. We fell out. I was like, ooh, I could hear the Twilight theme playing. She didn't actually cook them rabbit stew, but she did really help hide soldiers, though.
The misty town of Shady Glen lay just behind a mountain. Home to northern soldier ghosts sprung from hell's own fountain. No one seeks the valley's edge where spirits roam uneasy. Angry men are walking dead through Shady Glen by evening. Redneck soldiers lost their lives in 1864. Killed between the moon and sun, as told in town folklore. All laying by their loaded guns, still wearing boots and daggers. And now those fallen men still walk across Shady Glen, they stagger. Those soldier boys, they had their way with all the town's good women. They shot the old men, burned the fields, and plundered for provisions. The terror that they wielded cut a path of tears and sorrow. Those Yankee blues, they did not know their time was only borrowed. Shady Glen is broken land and fit for no one living, 'cause resting in the devil's hands, our souls gone unforgiven. Her crafty ways would save her. She trapped and cooked a rabbit stew, enough to feed a kingdom, and stirred in poison with a smile as the sun was slowly sinking. She brought the kettle to the camp, dressed up in lace and scarlet. Served her stew in army tents and danced beneath the starlight. The soldiers ate their fill and watched as Molly turned and swayed. The poison moving like a snake, filling up their veins. Molly Vaughn of Shady Glen was home before the day. News of how she'd spent her night was known by all the town folk. They were grateful for the stew that stopped those men from breathing. And now those redneck soldiers roam through Shady Glen by evening. Shady Glen is broken land and fit. Resting in the devil's hands, our souls gone unforgiven.
of the things that's really important in your songwriting, you and I have talked about this before, is sort of the spiritual side of the music. And you did a very successful song cycle for Christmas 2012.
Yes, and that was a real God-given project. It was just so strange how, you know, I can never tell you why a certain song will start, but we were traveling, we were going down the road with the band, and it was a long trip, a long haul, and we had two shows to do in two different places, and so I didn't make room reservations because we were going to try to drive as long as we possibly could, because I think it was like a 17-hour stretch or something.
Wait a minute, so there was no room at the inn for you?
Yeah, well, that's basically what happened. We were, I want to say we were in Missouri or Illinois or somewhere like that, and college football must be the end all there, because we tried to stop for miles. My husband was behind the wheel, and I was his shotgun driver, rider, and then the rest of the band were sleeping, so they didn't know it, but we were starting to see pink elephants, you know, so it was really time to stop because it was getting dangerous, and every exit we pulled off of, they said there was no room. And finally we get to one questionable-looking motel. I mean, it looked really ratty, but we were so tired, I wouldn't have cared if I had to sleep on a blow-up mattress in one of them. There was a sleepy-looking guy, because it was probably about 2 or 3 in the morning, and he says, yes, I can give you rooms. And when I got to the room that night, the room was so crummy that I didn't want to... I sat in the chair with my clothes piled on the chair so I didn't have to touch anything. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, that guy could have been the innkeeper, you know. He's just a regular old guy doing his job, sleepy. And that's what sort of launched that whole album, if you can believe it or not. And I sat right there in that nasty motel room and wrote, "You Cannot Stay Here."
Innkeeper, we are tired, and the night is coming on us. Haven't eaten yet. I have silver coin to offer if you would give us lodging. I'll gladly pay for rest. Is there room here in this place? Is there no room.
songwriter that I've talked to seems to have a different kind of forte, let's say. And I think one of the things that strikes me about your songs is that they always seem to tell a story and draw you in.
Aww.
And one of my favorites from your Holy Water CD that you put out in 2010 of all spiritual songs was Caney Creek to Canaan Land.
Up in the mountains, this is set up there in the mountains where my mother and father-in-law's cabin is. And, you know, everything is just, it's hard to get to because it's so mountainy there. I mean, really, to walk up my father-in-law's land to get to this old family graveyard at the top, you literally have to hold on to the trees and things and pull yourself up. So there's this place that they have the big family reunion every July 4th. And I've been married to Rick a long time, so we've been going for, you know, a long time to their July the 4th family reunions. And it's set down in a, I guess, a holler. I don't know what you call them, a holler or something. And it takes forever to get down to the bottom. But once you get down there, the land is flat. And there's a big Olympic-sized swimming pool that his great-aunt Eva had put in years ago. And running beside the pool, you have to go down the bank, is this really rough running water over rocks and stuff, and that's the Caney Creek. And it's by the time it gets down to where her land is, you know, it's just roaring off the top of the mountain. So it's beautiful, and it's running over rocks, and there's these gorgeous hemlock pines on the other side of the bank. I remember Rick and I walking down there, you know, just sitting on the bank there that day, and I told Rick, I said, if you don't believe in a God and you can look at something as gorgeous and heaven-made as that and still say you can't believe in a God, well, my goodness, you don't believe in a God, because he was just sitting there shining through those tree leaves. And we actually started writing that song just sitting there on the bank.
You've seen the hillside covered with devil's brew and sin, and think it's not as holy as old Jerusalem. You tell the folks that listen in, you're leaving here for good. You'll walk from here to Israel to stand where Jesus stood.
You don't have to walk.
You don't have to walk from Caney Creek to Canaan Land by the Lord. Well, you don't have to walk that far no more. If it's the Lord you're looking for, walk that far no more. Right here on the mountainside beneath the tall hillocks, on the banks of Caney Creek, you'll find the Son of God. Since the day he gave you life.
You don't have to walk.
You don't have to walk from Caney Creek to Canaan Land by the Lord. Well, you don't have to walk that far no more. If it's the Lord you're looking for, you don't have to walk that far.
One of the things that Kathy Anderson from Hadley Music has told me is you're starting to do more online concerts. How's that been going for you?
Oh, Richard, it's just a wonderful... I'll tell you what it does. It sort of levels the playing field for any artist that wants to try that approach. And it also allows people that don't get to see live music, if they're homebound or if they're not in this country. I have lots and lots of fans from the Netherlands and Germany and Russia and, you know, places so far away that will never get the opportunity probably to see me live. But I can come right into their living room, and it's a live show, and they can interact if the time slots allow, you know, for them to be up and watching the show. They can actually email questions during it that we answer, and it's just a really, really special way to bring music to a new audience and connect with that audience, or not even a new audience. A lot of my regular fans that come to a lot of my shows love to tune into them. It's just a fun way to do a show, and I hope it grows and grows and grows.
Now, you said that people in Russia can't see you live, but you did a tour there several years ago.
Yes, I did. We made many, many good friends, and I still hear from them. The United States government brought us over. I got an official call from the ambassador that said that I should consider myself the bluegrass music ambassador of the United States. And so we brought over our band. There goes my dog again. We brought over our band, and we sang our bluegrass songs. Their lifestyle, you know, they're not wealthy people. They work really hard, and they don't have a lot. And it's so funny how now the outside dog is barking. That's not my dog that's barking now. That's the outside dog. Come here, Tim Brooks. You go outside. Sorry. I have a Tim Brooks and a Molly. And Tim Brooks is the little dog, and she barks the loudest. Anyway, we went over there, and they so connected with the mountain songs and the themes to the mountain songs, like the hard living and the, you know, it was really interesting how it was a total connection. They didn't even understand my music. We had my language. They had an interpreter that would stand and interpret what I was saying.
Well, I know you're hard at work down there in Nashville. Kathy says you write every day. But
yes.
You, before we leave, you've got to brag on your new CD, Showing My Roots.
You know, we had started doing some of the cover songs that are included on this CD. We started doing them live about 3 years ago or 4 years ago. And when we do the shows, I always have fans that come up and want to buy the songs, you know, like what CD is that one on? And I didn't have them. I decided that it was probably time, and it would sure please the fans at the show. And we got in there, and I decided that I wanted to do songs that really led me to this place that I am musically now, the songs that sort of inspired me or the writers or the artists. And so it was kind of a fun thing to put together. We did a lot of soul searching for the songs that you're going to hear on this CD. Rick and I did happen to write the first one and the last one on the CD. The first one sort of sets the stage. It's called Showing My Roots. And then the last song is really sort of my anchor, because growing up, my grandmother, I had an illness when I was a small child, and I was actually in the children's hospital for a long time. And my grandmother, who was just a very devout Christian, beautiful woman, loved music, taught me my love for music. She said that her rocking chair and the song Jesus Loves Me is what healed my illness. And so I always use that song Jesus Loves Me in my head anytime I'm afraid or missing my grandmother. So the song that I've always had a song I can lean on was written about was Jesus Loves Me.
I think that's going to be a wonderful way to end this time we've spent together. We're going to let folks hear this. I've always had a song I could lean on.
Well, I sure have enjoyed talking to you, Richard.
Well, Donna, it's always a treat for us to get to visit with you.
Well, I hope to see you soon.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
My mother's voice falling on my ear as she was holding me, rocking away my childhood fears with a soothing melody. Even now, on a restless night, I recall that simple tune. let the memories fill my room. I've always had a song I can lean on, a thread of notes like an old friend, sweet and strong, a soft refrain like an
Thanks for listening to The Music Room on WVUD. For more information about this and other episodes of The Music Room, including selections from the interviews and information about the music, visit us online at sites.udel.edu/TMR. Tune in next Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. for another episode of The Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark.